Judy. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is off today and sitting in with us, political editor from Fox 32, Mike Flannery. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Such an important political day. We know you have thoughts and hopefully can make some sense of what's going on with this crazy election.
Wait a minute. You didn't tell me I'd have to do that.
That was part of the job. When we called and said, hey, Mike, can you do it? Didn't we also say, hey, make some sense of what's going on? We'll try to do that. Listen to the top five at five today for your chance to win a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview with true outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom. Again, that's coming up in the top five at five. But let's talk about the debate, the big showdown in Vegas tonight. Some high stakes on the line, both candidates, but Donald Trump is appearing to not be showing. He needs a momentum shift here. He needs to turn the tide with the polls in recent days, showing him now down about 7 points nationally and dipping in some critical states that he needs to win, Nevada and Florida among them, in order to pull off a win in this election. Joining us from Real Clear Politics is A.B. Stoddard. A.B., can he do it tonight? What does he have to do, I guess, is a better question, to do that?
Well, I mean, he needs, as he said, he needs a real reversal tonight, and that would require some real focus on keeping Clinton on the defensive, which I think that, you know, Mike Wallace will help with. I think he's going to be asking her some very tough questions.
Chris.
And I think that if he keeps her on the defensive and he stays off of his own drama, then I think that, you know, he could sort of at least have a pause, which could lead to a reset, and that could help him. But it would also require, you know, several weeks of getting back on the teleprompter and back on the issues and not talking about conspiracies and all that other babble he's been doing. I mean, I think that you saw him really come back from the polling dead starting August 13th when he changed his management of his campaign. And about 5 weeks later, he went into the first debate on September 26th up with all the momentum in the poll. So it will require not freelancing Donald Trump. It will require a teleprompter Trump, and I don't know if he's ready to do that.
Does that include, do you think, A.B., a wise strategic decision for the Trump campaign to really dig in deeply? And we were talking, Mike Flannery and I, earlier about painting a narrative that sort of links what has been revealed here to create some kind of a narrative against Hillary Clinton. I think a lot of people are seeing these document dumps and sort of like trying to absorb hundreds and hundreds of them per day and trying to understand what does it all mean.
Right. And you're right. I mean, it's potent stuff. It's just that at this point, we're drinking water through a fire hose. You know, there's a lot of information every day. There's going to be State Department emails coming out on Friday. There are going to be more State Department emails of hers coming out Friday, November 4th, right before Election Day. Lord only knows what's in them. It can be very damaging for her. But what Donald Trump does is, instead of taking advantage of it and creating that narrative, he talks about, you know, Paul Ryan and how mad he is at him. So he's really always consuming the spotlight and taking all of the oxygen out of any story about Hillary Clinton. Well, if he makes tonight about Hillary Clinton and he makes the next 3 weeks about Hillary Clinton, he could close it in some of those battleground states where he's not so far behind her. And remember, those national polls don't matter. Mm-hmm. That just means he's behind Romney in, like, Idaho and Texas, but he's going to win anyway, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But those battlegrounds are all that matter. And if he could close it up by keeping the focus on her and keeping, you know, his message about trade and immigration sort of enthusing his voters, then, you know, then he has a chance. But he's behind in an historic way right now. She's moving ahead with all of the groups she needs to win. And that's because this is a referendum on Donald Trump now and really not a referendum on her.
I mean, and A.B., you reference the historic nature of the hole he's in. No one in as deep a hole as this, or actually no candidate in an even smaller hole than this, has ever come back from that deficit.
But it's a strange election, though.
But this is just such a volatile season. I mean, nothing would surprise me. Look at the margin Johnson and Stein have in New Hampshire. It's double digits. In other important places like Ohio, it's six. I mean, that margin is not disappearing like we all thought it would, because Gary Johnson is a goofball and can't answer any, you know, questions that is expected of any presidential candidate. It's not. And what happens if damaging revelations from the State Department emails or more WikiLeaks emails that are not from the Tesla's account, but are from, you know, Cheryl Mills' account or something, come, and could be sort of potentially fatal. This woman is a documented liar. She was under investigation by the FBI. FBI agents are now speaking out on background, saying that they're furious with the way the investigation was conducted. Anything can happen to the Clinton campaign to depress her vote.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
what scares Democrats. And so,
but here's the question.
You know, can't really totally count them out.
In that first debate, Trump rarely exited from the same sentence that he had entered. He meandered all over the place with those word salad answers, much more focused in the second debate. Is there a way, you know, supposedly, you know, we've read that Chris Christie was helping him to prepare, playing the role of Hillary and, you know, trying to get under his skin. Do you think a self-controlled Donald Trump who can at least throw some policy, you know, display some policy chops is possible tonight?
Yeah, that's the problem. So his challenge going in tonight is this. He knows that Chris Wallace is going to really grill Clinton, right? And mm-hmm. she knows that. So that's why she's been holed up in a hotel for 5 days straight, because she knows that Chris Wallace is going to go after on Benghazi and our email server. I mean, you know, undoubtedly, right?
Mm-hmm. So right. And he's going to cite and he's going to preface those questions with specifics about her lies.
He's a tough questioner. No,
but is Donald
probably the most
Trump prepared to calmly take a grilling from Chris Wallace and not get emotional and get and freak out? That's the problem, is that with all the Chris Christie and Ryan's previous practice he has, is he's ready for the tough questions he's also going to get from Chris Wallace? And can he actually string three sentences together on how we deal with Syria? I don't know. If he comes and he's prepared and he's memorized something, the bar is so low, everyone will say it was a great night for him. But he has to do that. And even last time he interrupted her, he was angry. There's a lot of focus group reaction to that that's negative. And so remember that the audience dropped off by nearly a third after the first debate, because people just walked away. They said that man doesn't have the temperament. He has to really show a different temperament. And is that possible? I don't know. I don't see him display that so far in the key settings and the key tests he's had for this job. He hasn't pulled it off.
AB, can I ask you about something you wrote? You in your Real Clear Politics column about Donald Trump, anarchist in chief. You quoted a woman named Rhonda, who said that if Hillary Clinton gets in, I myself am ready for a revolution. How much of that is really out there, do you think?
Well, you know, you've read now since Rhonda last week, we've actually gotten a lot more over the weekend. People talking about, you know, how they're going to go talk to the Mexicans and the Muslims, quote unquote, at the polling place, people at Trump rallies. I mean, he's really encouraging a lot of nervous-making activity when he talks about people sort of policing the polling booths and stuff. And there is a lot of, if you look at a lot of the kind of the websites that are people, you know, the sort of alt-right websites and stuff, I hope it's a minority of people who think that this is going to be a civil war in this country. Mm-hmm. I hope that there will be, you know, extra police presence at these specific polling places in Philly in particular that Donald Trump keeps referencing. I hope people are going to, he's going to concede the election if he loses it, and there's going to be a peaceful transfer of power. But my point in that was that if he has followers that are talking that way, he should be, you know, he should be trying to heal after the divisive campaign, at least, come November 8th, if he loses, he needs to provide a healing voice and say, it's time to come together. I fought it really hard, and I'm really sorry that I couldn't deliver for you, but we need to come together as a country. And it just doesn't sound like he plans on conceding. And I think it's very important to note that Mike Pence, the VP nominee, as well as Kellyanne Conway, the campaign manager, and now his own daughter today, have all said he'd concede if he loses. And that, I think that would help a lot. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, people like Rhonda are going to believe that it's time to, you know, keep fighting. And that's not good.
Speaking of people like Rhonda, I think many people are infuriated by this new video that has come out, the James O'Keefe video. Somebody who's known to be a Democratic agitator, but and some say, well, he splices and dices things to prove his point. I think even if you take all of that out, which is known to be true in the past, there are segments of this that are pretty damning for those Democratic operatives who are featured, who now one has resigned and one has been fired. And it talks about things, it even mentions Chicago specifically, about paid agitators going out there at the Trump rally that was canceled, ended up being canceled because it turned violent here, that they were trained how to agitate, to incite violence, and some pretty damning things. How much of this is just normal politics that we just don't see as part of the sausage fest, the sausage making process, and how much of it is, you know, really serious issues here?
Yeah, I think that stuff is so depressing, and I thought it. And when that rally was canceled months ago, I thought it was depressing. Then, you know, we really have to have a coarse, ugly debate now in our campaigns, but we have to have it, and each side deserves to be able to have it and talk to their supporters without any violence or even potential for violence. And these guerrilla tactics have no place. I know that both sides are getting very sophisticated at this. And I know the Democrats, you know, they sort of got a little more sophisticated sooner with things like trackers, you know, making sure that there was always someone at every following candidates around to make sure if they messed up and said anything wrong, you know, that they'd have it on video. Mm-hmm. So the sophistication of this is, you know, years in the making, and I think the Democrats for sure have taken it to sort of a science. They have, you know, they know how to turn out their voters. They're just better at this stuff. But,
you know, AB, I was actually at that University of Illinois Chicago campus
that night
back in March.
I
was there with a couple of colleagues. Mm-hmm. My colleague Dane Placco was outside.
Right.
It was
great
apparent
report.
The minute I got into that hall, it was apparent that there were hundreds, maybe more than 1,000 anti-Trump folks in there. And I think some of it was a multiplicity of groups. There was a student government group from UIC. There was a group of Muslim students. There was a group of Hispanic kids who were there. And Bob Cramer and this nitwit Foval had nothing to do with bringing those people out. I mean,
they were there on their own.
Right, and that's what makes it so hard.
It is hard.
But this activity is because when do you know that it's just a grassroots protest of really angry students or, you know, certain groups, and then when is it orchestrated and actually paid for and really violent? I mean, so it's very difficult to find
lines. Well, but the one woman on oxygen who was punched out at the rally in North Carolina was outed on the tapes. She said, they proudly said, one of them, Koval, I think it was, that's one of ours. She was our paid agitator. So it's complicated stuff. But AB, we'll be watching tonight, and we appreciate you checking in with us today.
Happy to be on with you. Thank you.
Thanks. We are going to check over with Violetta Podramatic now and see your traffic situation.